Our exhortation this morning will be brought by Brother Aaron, and his title is The Russian Invasion of Israel and Its Defeat.
If we could go ahead and turn to Daniel chapter 2. Now the subject matter this morning may not at first appear to be exhortational, maybe more expositional in nature, but with all the horrid things that we see happening in the culture and the world around us, we feel that these things are very exhortational in their value, because they give us hope for the future, and an understanding of the reality of things that are to come. Our consideration, built on last night's consideration, is only a brief review to reinforce the reality of the coming situation. Now, there are many aspects that we will not be able to consider this morning, such as the role of the Western European nations and their subversion to Russia's will, the major role of the papacy and Catholicism joined hand in hand with Eastern Orthodoxy in supporting the Russian autocrats' designs on Israel. Also, the role of Rome and Western Europe after the defeat of the Gogian Confederacy as they reorganize to counter Christ's rule out of Jerusalem. The subject is extremely large and involves a very clearly laid out prophetic plan. It involving various layers that is revealed in basic and also detailed forms throughout the scriptures. We will stick to the basic this morning. We now go back to Daniel 2 and Nebuchadnezzar's dream image. In revealing the dream, Daniel informed Nebuchadnezzar in the 28th verse that the vision revealed what shall be in the latter days. So, the vision, in its totality, is reserved for the time shortly prior to and concurrent with the striking of the stone power upon the feet, destroying all elements of the image at the same time, the Christ stone power. Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome have all come and gone, though the influence of the Romans still continues today. Yet, verse 35 tells us that the iron, the clay, the brass and silver and gold were to be broken to pieces together. Now, how can it be that these four kingdoms, which have already met their end, are going to be destroyed together? The problem being that since all of these kingdoms have come and gone, the image itself has never stood complete, as a complete form, as Nebuchadnezzar saw it, so that all its parts can be destroyed together at once by the Christ stone. So again, the image, as we consider the image, is not something that has ever existed before. It has existed in parts, but has never stood as a complete image. The four main empires, as represented in the metal, entangled themselves with the land of Israel and its Jewish inhabitants in the past. Let me repeat that. The four main empires, as represented in the metal, entangled themselves with the land of Israel and its Jewish inhabitants. There were struggles over the Holy Land after Rome destroyed Jerusalem and scattered its people, and destroying the temple as well, and eventually exiled the vast majority of its Jewish population. But after the Judean Commonwealth was put to an end once and for all, the occupation of the land by the European Crusaders, the Ottomans, and eventually the British Empire would not have the same degree of prophetic import, nor prophetically represent circumstances in Israel prior to Christ's return. Now that there is once again a Jewish state in the land, we see the dream image near its full significance and application. The past empires listed in the image, including the divided nature of the Roman Empire into the European toes, gives us indicators as the territories controlled or heavily influenced by the combined or amalgamated power that will be broken by the Christ stone cut out of the mountain without hands. Verse 45. The metals will be unified in terrible and united effort. This is what interests us about Russia's current movements for influence and power as it expands westward into Europe and southward into the Middle East. It already controls some of the territories once held by the Persian Empire. And we remember that Persia is represented in Daniel 7 as a bear. The territories of previous powers will be united under one head, Gog of the land of Magog, for the purpose of opposing God's people, Israel. Let's read from Isaiah chapter 34, verses 1 through 8. Isaiah 34, 1 through 8. We read, "Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world and all things that come forth of it. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them, he hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. And all the hosts of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falleth off from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Idumea and upon the people of my curse to judgment. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, and with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Lord hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, and a great slaughter in the land of Idumea." And we'll get to that shortly. "And the unicorn shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, and the year of recompense," and please note, "for the controversy of Zion." For the controversy of Zion. For Russia itself, it will be the intent of geopolitical and economic dominance as Israel stands in its way for absolute control of the Middle East and its resources. All conquest has the elements of political and economic interest at heart. All conquest has the elements of political and economic interest at heart. But we will also see a powerful religious and social element driving a hatred of Israel and the Jews once again. As Isaiah tells us, it is the controversy or dispute of Zion. There will be the Russian dragon in the east as the military power and will of this endeavor, along with the support and encouragement of the papal false prophet and the obedient and self-serving dupes of the Western European beast, all in collusion. All will be driven towards Armageddon by the maddening and illogical motivator of the frog-like spirits of the false sense of eternity, equality, and liberty. All will be driven towards Armageddon by the maddening and illogical motivator of the frog-like spirits of the false sense of eternity, equality, and liberty, which is actually the spirit of madness, brutality, and oppression. To most of the world, Israel now stands for all that is evil in the world. Israel now stands for all that is evil in the world, in their perception. And they will declare it as their duty, for all kinds of self-serving reasons, of course, to put an end to the problem of Israel once and for all. No doubt, the current Palestinian issue will play some kind of incendiary role as well. Now, as we move on, please note that our main references are found in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39, Joel 2 and 3, Daniel chapter 11, the latter portion, and Revelation chapter 16, verses 13 through 17. Now, this is a very, very general outline. There are more details that could be filled in between the numbers, but we're going to try to keep it more basic. And I'd like to give credit for a lot of this to which Brother Darrell had a hand in on it, is a little pamphlet that has a point-by-point latter-day scenario that runs through the gamut of Russia's invasion and then through its destruction, which has always been a very helpful tool for me that I keep in my Bible or on my desk at home. Now, as we move on, please note that our main references are found in Ezekiel, Joel, Daniel, and Revelation. As we mentioned last night, the precursor for this invasion is a presence in the land by a Jewish nation in economic prosperity and security, which was dealt by Brother Pat. Not a full restoration, but an impressive presence nonetheless. Ezekiel 38:3 describes them as dwelling safely, Hebrew batak, or confidently. This does not just represent attitude, but one of economic prosperity and a sense of peace and military security. Just this past week, there was some information that came out regarding Israel's economic status, and they are doing very, very well right now. Matter of fact, when the numbers are compared, much better than the United States. Israel's probably the most prosperous country as far as size comparison in the world at this point. Some brethren contend that the only way that such a condition can exist in Israel, this confidence, this prosperity, some brethren contend that the only way that such a condition can exist in Israel is if Christ and the saints are already dwelling there, having delivered them from some kind of Arab invasion and with the kingdom set up already. Let it be understood that, number one, this is not what is prophetically described. For if Christ and the saints are already encamped in Israel at this time, they will fail in protecting Israel from the Gogian invasion that is described. Number two, the phrase to dwell safely is not exclusive to the conditions of the kingdom. We will not look at them at this time, but there are several of examples of Israel dwelling safely in the past. If you go through the time of the judges, the time of the kings, there is that explanation or description of them dwelling safely. So Christ and the saints do not have to be dwelling in the land for Israel to be dwelling safely or confidently. Also, Israel is referenced as being a land of unwalled villages. If one were to tour Israel today, and thinking of the perspective of Ezekiel's time, how he is seeing it, it is now just that, quite literally, a land of unwalled villages. By all present appearances, it would appear that the prophetic stage has been set for both the return of the Master to raise and gather all those who have connected themselves to Christ through the blood of the everlasting covenant, and for the Gogian host to make its grand invasion into the Holy Land. But what sparks this final push, we can only speculate at this time. Turkey and Constantinople itself must be subdued first for Russia to take on the mantle of the King of the North. Turkey and Constantinople itself must be subdued before Russia can take on the mantle of the King of the North. Russia is not yet the King of the North, but it certainly is moving in that direction very quickly. Daniel 11:40 informs us that in the latter days, the king of the north will be challenged or pushed against by the king of the south. Such will be a continuation of the long struggle that first existed with the Greek Ptolemaic kingdom that was centered in Egypt and the Greek Seleucid kingdom that inhabited Syria up into Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey, after the division of Alexander the Great's empire among his four generals. I think I have a map. There we go. Both empires were in constant struggle with another, with the land of Israel and the Jews caught in the middle as outlined throughout the 11th chapter of Daniel. Brother Thomas felt that the pushing indicated was the rebellion, or the pushing that is indicated there in the latter portion of Daniel 11. Brother Thomas felt that this pushing was indicated with the rebellion of Muhammad Ali, viceroy of Egypt, against the authority of the Ottoman Turks in the 1830s. And in a sense, yes, this was a pushing against the King of the North of that time, whoever inhabited those territories. Later, towards the end of World War I, and this was brought up yesterday morning, the British had dominance in Egypt and itself played the role of King of the South and pushed the Ottoman Turks, the King of the North, out of Palestine. of course, the European powers. No, excuse me, I'm reading the wrong line here. We'll ignore what I just said there. Many brethren see 1917 as a fulfillment of this pushing. But understanding that Russia is soon to take on the mantle of King of the North, when it finally takes over Constantinople, and Russia, and we'll speak more of this tonight, Russia has made that intent very clear, that they want Constantinople back. But understanding that Russia is soon to take on the mantle of King of the North, when it finally takes over Constantinople and the ancient Seleucid territory, it is our personal opinion, and please take it just as that, it is our personal opinion that a final push against Russia is yet to come, to stoke his passions enough to make a final push south. Russia already occupies and essentially controls Syria. So they already have a foothold into the Seleucid domain. Now exactly who will be the king of the south? We would perceive that it will be the Tarshish powers, the Britain, or England, and the United States, and her allies, as indicated in Ezekiel 38 and 13. That would mean some kind of alliance or protectorate status with Egypt to qualify as the king of the south. Or possibly a break in the current Egyptian-Russian alliance. And there has formed a Russian alliance out of the retreat of the United States from Middle Eastern affairs. A break in the current Egyptian-Russian alliance and a push by Egypt itself against Russian interests in the region. Of course, with the U.S. and the Britain supporting them. Now, we can only speculate at this time, but Egypt and Russia currently have developed very close ties, but that will change as their interests are not the same. Egypt, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, and even Jordan, actually find themselves with similar interests, and that is opposition to Iran. Daniel informs us that Egypt will be the first objective of the invading northern force. Now, whatever push takes place, the Russian Confederacy invades, that we are sure of. For what ultimate purpose or end? Ezekiel 38 and 10 indicates to us that Gog shall think an evil thought, or as Bullinger renders it, devise a mischievous thought. Verse 12 of Ezekiel 38 goes on to state that they intend to take a spoil and take a prey. Daniel 11 and 43 informs us that in regard to Egypt, that the king of the north shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. We know that from a natural standpoint, to control this region will be a geopolitical checkmate against the West. The Suez will have been captured, and a major chunk of the world's natural gas and oil reserves cornered. Truly, this will be a time of great trouble, not just for the Middle East, not just for Israel, not just for Egypt, but for the world in its entirety. The invasion force will be immense and horribly destructive. Horribly destructive. We are told in Ezekiel chapter 38, verses 15 and 16, and please take a look at that. And now, starting in the 15th verse of Ezekiel 38, and thou shalt come from thy place out of the north parts, thou and many people with thee, all of them riding horses, a great company and a mighty army. And thou shalt come up against my people of Israel as a cloud to cover the land. A cloud to cover the land. And from Joel 2 and 2, a great people. Actually, go ahead and look at that. Look that up as well. I'll pause for just a moment as you turn that up. Joel 2 and 2, and we'll just keep reading. Joel 2 and 2, a great people and a strong, there hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it. even to the years of many generations. A fire devoureth before them, and behind them a flame burnt. The land is as the garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness, yea, and nothing shall escape them. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen, so shall they run. Interestingly enough, the Scythians, which we have identified with the Russian territory, the Scythians were renowned for their horsemanship and were the ones to invent the basic saddle. So if you ever wondered where the saddle came from, it was the Scythians. Going on down to verse 10, the earth shall quake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, or the political and ecclesiastical, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. It is promoted by some in Christadelphia that this Gogian invasion will never harm Israel. It is their thought that the great enemy of Israel that is to bring about the return of Christ is the Arab nations around Israel, and that by the time Gog attempts an invasion, Christ and the saints will already be firmly entrenched in the land of Israel and there to protect it. As we have read, it is clear that the invasion is in fact complete upon Israel as a cloud to cover the land, and extraordinarily destructive. Ezekiel 39 and 10 makes it clear that Israel will have been spoiled and robbed by this invader. Ezekiel 39 and 10. They put emphasis upon the fact that in 39 and 4, that Russia or the Gogian host will fall upon the mountains of Israel. It is claimed that this speaks of the northern border of Israel, and that Gog will make it no further. Now, a simple search of the term mountains of Israel throughout the book of Ezekiel will reveal that mountains of Israel is in fact the Judean hill country, the heart of Israel itself, the Judean hill country. At the time Ezekiel prophesied, the northern kingdom was long gone. So all the prophecies that reference the mountains of Israel are related to this hill country that sits in the heart of Israel itself, including Jerusalem. There's a couple pictures of the Judean hill country. I've never had the pleasure of visiting Israel, but for those who have been, they probably can visualize this very strongly in their minds. That's not exactly flat plain country. This is the mountains of Israel, as referenced in Ezekiel. The first wave of the attack, as we have briefly mentioned, we understand will be to push all the way into Egypt, as we have seen from the latter portion of Daniel 11. Isaiah 9 speaks of a cruel Lord that will subdue Egypt, which has both a past and future application, as indicated by the latter day context towards the end of that chapter. To take Egypt and the Suez is a tactical necessity in order to cut off any help from British or U.S. ships coming up from the Gulf of Suez. To do this, Russia will have to attack by ship and air from Turkey, Syria, and probably Cyprus, or the ships of Kittim, across the Mediterranean. And also by paratrooper infantry, troop carriers, and tanks down the coastal plain of Israel, just as did the armies of the Seleucids. But, in this first wave, avoiding conquest of Jerusalem, we are told in Daniel 11 and 41, he shall enter also into the glorious land, and many shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. The glorious land is, in fact, Israel. No doubt their military and surviving populations will be utterly stunned and thrown off kilter. The fact that territories of modern-day Jordan escape this onslaught provides a refuge a refuge for fleeing Israelis as indicated by Isaiah 16 and 4. You can mark it, but we're not going to read it at this time. In their confusion, Jews will also flee southwest into Egypt, but to no benefit as Egypt will be under attack as well. Daniel, like Ezekiel, indicates that the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps, or in other words, companions or allies. But Daniel 11 provides an interesting detail not mentioned in Ezekiel 38. We are told in verse 44 of Daniel chapter 11, "But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many." Tidings out of the east and north will be in relation to the concentration of Gogian forces descended upon Egypt. Their concentration is now in Egypt, so they will hear tidings out of the east and out of the north. But what are these tidings? The word tidings is from the Hebrew shamua, which indicates a report or rumor. We are told that the king of the north is troubled, which in the original, and this is where you get the full sense, which in the original means to be alarmed or terrified. The king of the north will be alarmed or terrified at what these tidings or rumors that he hears. What kind of military intelligence will its generals receive that will terrify this great and mighty and proud confederacy? East, in relation to his position in Egypt, is Sinai, or the Sinaitic Peninsula. It would appear that they will begin to receive reports of frightening and mysterious activities emanating from this area. This will not be natural, and there will be no immediate explanation to the Gogian generals, as this will not fit into their contingency plans. Who is this multitude? What are their intentions? Who is the great host located there? We know the Yahweh of armies. Tidings will also come out of the north, which is Israel and Jerusalem, or in that direction. Will the Tarshish nations be attempting some kind of counterattack? In Ezekiel 38 and 13, we are told that Sheba and Dedan, these are the territories of the Arabian Peninsula, Sheba and Dedan, and Tarshish and her young lions, and we don't have time to go into what Tarshish is. Read the next sanctuary keeper, that's coming up. And we will get it out, it's a little late, but you can read it there. Tarshish and her young lions, Britain and her English-speaking offspring, will ask the question of God, "Art thou come to take a spoil?" Brother Thomas indicates that is the tiding. Brother Thomas in Elpis Israel paraphrases this as more of a challenge than a question. I think this is very interesting. Brother Thomas in Elpis Israel paraphrases this as more of a challenge than a question. I quote, and this is his paraphrase, "Thou shalt not spoil Israel and subdue their country if we can help it. Thou shalt not spoil Israel and subdue their country if we can help it." But the only result, end of quote, but the only result of such an empty and forceless tiding is to infuriate God, to lash out with unfettered brutality. And also, what of Israel's nuclear weapons? Is it beyond reason to think that whatever Israeli defenses might be left at this time might attempt to mobilize such weapons as a last and desperate move? In 1973, they had them on the tarmac, ready to use. They were that desperate. This situation will not be anything in comparison to 1973. That would be quite a rumor for Israel to get, or for Russia to get wind of. Up to this point, Israel have never been pushed to that degree of desperation. As a result of these confusing and threatening tidings, the Gogian host makes a devastating thrust into the heart of Israel with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many. according to Daniel chapter 11. Their first pass through Israel was a debilitating but passing blow. This time their full intentions are revealed, and it is with the objective to drive a stake in the heart of Israel once and for all. To make a way in the Hebrew means to completely destroy, exterminate. Their intentions, when they come back in with full force, is to exterminate. This is not something done during Gog's initial invasion. They, in a sense, turn back to finish the job not done in the speed of the initial invasion. Zechariah 13 and 8 tragically informs us, that in all the land, saith Yahweh, two parts shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. This will be the time of Jacob's trouble, as prophesied in Jeremiah 30 and 7. But as that verse continues, but he shall be saved out of it, though this will no doubt seem to natural appearances as impossible. In a sign of complete victory, the king of the north will establish his military headquarters in Jerusalem. At that time, Nebuchadnezzar's dream image will stand in full manifestation. As is prophesied in Daniel 11 and 45, and he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the sea and the glorious holy mountain. No matter what some Christadelphian expositors have claimed, Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 through 45 have never been fulfilled. They are yet to be fulfilled. Now, the world community will no doubt rejoice. The Tarshish powers, unable to counter the overwhelming and violent onslaught, will be in disarray, left dealing with a Jewish refugee and humanitarian catastrophe. And unable to stop the world's new superpower, bent on world domination. They will be unable to stop it. Now, the destruction of this Gogian invasion, or invader. Sorry, we're flying through some of these images. Before this time, as we've already mentioned, it will have been necessary for the believers to have been called away and judged. What we believe to be somewhere in the region of the Sinai Peninsula. I know there's different opinions exactly where that's going to take place. It will be the first task of Christ and the immortalized saints to rescue Israel from this grand invader. So all matters pertaining to judgment and immortalization will need to be completed by the time that Russia entrenches itself in Jerusalem. How long the period of invasion and occupation by the Gogian forces lasts, or the duration of judgment, we cannot be sure. A matter of months? A year? When Russia does gain control, complete control, of the region, we sense that the occupation cannot last long. It cannot last long, as the remaining Jews, those still held up in the land, and those escaped but captured in Egypt, and those escaped to neighboring Jordan, will need help, and they will need it quickly. They will need help, and they will need it quickly. Then, as a gathering storm that cannot be held back any longer, the saving arm of Yahweh, verse 4, seemingly out of nowhere, his jealousy and wrath for the land and its people can be contained no longer. Let's read Habakkuk chapter 3. Starting in the third verse, and this will be through the 13th verse. We read, and starting in the third verse, God came from Teman, and actually that should read as a future tense. God shall come in from Teman, and his Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And his brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand, and there was the hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, and the curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. Was the Lord displeased against the rivers? Was thine anger against the rivers? Was thy wrath against the sea, that thou didst ride upon thy horses and thy chariots of salvation? Thy bow was made quite naked, according to the oaths of the tribes, even thy words, Selah. Thou didst cleave the earth with rivers. The mountains saw thee, and they trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered his voice and lifted up his hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of thine arrows they went, and at the shining of thy glittering spear. This would be the political and ecclesiastical powers paralyzed. Thou didst march through the land in indignation. Thou didst thresh the heathen in anger. Thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people, even for the salvation with thine anointed. Thou woundest the head. Head there is Rosh. Thou woundest the head of Rosh out of the house of the wicked by discovering the foundation unto the neck. Selah. Following a similar path that Joshua and the children of Israel took, they head towards Jerusalem, swinging around the eastern side of the Dead Sea and cross the Dead Sea into the plains of Jordan. And I actually skipped just a period. Let me back up. This showing of this power initially involves rescue of Jews from Egypt after the manner of Moses, but also of a cataclysmic encounter with the front of the Gogian forces in Basra. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 63. Isaiah chapter 63, verses 1 through 5. Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Basra? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength, that's I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine fat? I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in mine anger, and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. And I looked, and there was none to help. And I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore mine own arm brought salvation unto me, and my fury, it upheld me. After this confrontation in Basra, and proceeding to what we accidentally jumped ahead to, following a similar path that Joshua and the children of Israel took, they head towards Jerusalem. Swinging around the eastern side of the Dead Sea and across the Dead Sea into the plains of Jordan. River Jordan into the plains of Jordan itself. They proceed through the Valley of Achor, which instead of representing trouble due to the sin of Achan, and that's what Achor is associated with, the sin of Achan, it becomes, according to Hosea 2:15, a door of hope. Instead of trouble, it becomes a door of hope. Upon the approach to Jerusalem, it is then that we are told by Zechariah in the 14th chapter, then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof towards the east and towards the west. It is not hard to imagine the utter dismay of those forces gathered at Jerusalem. They have heard of this destructive force coming out of Sinai. They have known that something went terribly wrong in Basra. Something went terribly wrong in Basra. And like the inhabitants of Jericho, might they be found waiting in fearful but defiant expectation? But now finally, is the Yahweh of armies revealed in full manifestation with Christ as its head. Visualize the fear. Visualize the confusion and the thunderous cries of despair on one side. And hear the shouts of triumph and praise to Yahweh emanating from the camp of the saints. Starting in Ezekiel chapter 38. Ezekiel 38. Verse 19 and then through 39:5. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel, so that the fishes of the sea and the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the earth and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake in my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down and the steep places shall fall and every wall shall fall to the ground. And I will call for a sword against him throughout all my mountains, saith the Lord God. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. Gog will self-destruct. And I will plead against him with pestilence and with blood. And I will rain upon him and upon his bands and upon the many people that are with him an overflowing rain and great hailstones, fire and brimstone. Thus will I magnify myself and sanctify myself. And I will be known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am the Lord. Here again, God manifestation. The manifestation, the glorification of God's name. Verse chapter 39, verse 1. Therefore, thou son of man, prophesy against Gog, and say, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. And I will turn thee back, and leave but the sixth part of thee, and will cause thee to come up from the north parts, and will bring thee upon the mountains of Israel. And I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. Utter confusion, utter disarray. Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy bands, and the people that is with thee. I will give thee unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. Thou shalt fall upon the open field, for I have spoken it, saith the Lord God. Confusion and the forces of nature will be used to turn this horribly prideful and brutal confederacy upon itself, man against man. Just as what was done to the enemy of Israel during the reign of Jehoshaphat, that's found in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 22 and 23, and other enemies as well. Will they even know what hit them? We think in one aspect they will, in another aspect they will not. Here then is Armageddon, as spoken of in Revelation 16, or the Valley of Judgment. Literally, it is a heap of sheaves in the Valley of Judgment. This is the area between the Mount of Olives and the eastern walls of Jerusalem. But no doubt this destruction will spread throughout the ranks of Gog for miles and miles. Here it is where the prophet Daniel declares in 11:45, Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. The prophet Joel calls this, in chapter 3 and 14, the valley of decision or of threshing. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of Yahweh is near in the valley of decision. This will be the smiting of Nebuchadnezzar's image at the feet, beginning the crumbling process of the kingdom of men. Other pertinent passages can be found in Daniel 8, verses 24 and 25, Micah chapter 5, Zephaniah chapter 3 and 8, Jeremiah chapter 25, verses 15 through 26. The nations of the earth, not directly involved, but watching from afar, will know that something quite amazing, something quite supernatural and terrible has happened. As is stated in Ezekiel 38 and 23, I will be known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. Psalms 46 and 10, a very beautiful passage in and of itself, states, Be still. And know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. It is here, after the still of a quieting storm, Christ makes himself known to his Jewish brethren who have been held up in Jerusalem. How they have survived, we do not know how. But their captors at this point are no longer alive. Visualize the amazement and fear of the Jews. and the sense of night turned to day, hopelessness turned to rejoicing. In Psalms chapter 24, verses 7 through 10. Psalms 24, 7 through 10. Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lift up, ye everlasting doors. And the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord, Yahweh, strong and mighty. Yahweh, mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O ye gates, even lift them up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? And up to this point, the Jews will not know. Who is this? It is the Lord of hosts, or He who will be armies. He is the King of glory, Selah. The prophet Zechariah tells us of the dramatic and heart-wrenching union between Christ and His natural Jewish brethren when they realize the magnitude of their 2,000-year-long rejection of Him. He who has come to save them despite their rejection of Him. And by rejecting Christ, they have actually rejected God who sent Him. This is indicated in the language of Zechariah chapter 12 and 10, where it states, "And they shall look upon Me, whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for Him, as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn." The rebuilding and recovery of Israel under their king commences almost immediately. Ezekiel 39, 9 through 16, and we're not going to read it this time, outlines the very practical necessities that follow the horrors of battle. First, Israel takes the spoils of war back from the Gogian invader after being spoiled themselves. Further evidence to the fact that the Gogian invader is in fact successful in overrunning the land of Israel. Two, the massive nature of the invasion and the armaments used is quite a massive thing and is matter-of-factly revealed, showing the reality of this event. It takes 7 years to destroy the weaponry used. And, thirdly, 7 months to bury the dead. And actually, this process of burying the dead will continue even further. That's another issue. Again, the destruction of the Gogian invader is only the first step in the subjection of the earth and preparation for the millennial reign of Christ. The Jews still living throughout the earth must be regathered. The nations are to be called to submit to Christ's reign, the mid-heaven proclamation, as found in Revelation 14. Having reorganized under the authority of the papacy, the European beast nations, without their Russian leader, reject Christ's command to obey. Therefore, the judgments and war upon the Roman apostasy will commence, rooting out all vestiges of apostasy throughout the earth over a 30-year time period. Now, what we have laid out here in general terms, many brethren view as an outdated fantasy. But be assured, these things are certain to happen, as sound brethren have long expected due to the writings of the prophets. They are real, they are thrilling, and they will happen with or without us. The only question is, will we be so blessed to partake of the honor of being part of the Yahweh of armies that brings these matters to a finality? And we understand that we make that answer now. Thank you.